Hi, this is Mrs. Kimball, and I will be reading chapters 4 through 7. Chapter 4. As you've probably noticed, I'm more talkative than most trees. This is new for me. I'm still getting the hang of it. Nonetheless, I've always known how to keep a secret. You have to be discreet when you're a wish tree. People tell trees all kinds of things. They know we'll listen. It's not like we have a choice. Besides, the more you listen, the more you learn. Bongo says I'm a busybody, and I suppose she has a point. She's my best pal, a crow I've known since she was nothing but a pecking beak in a speckled egg. We disagree sometimes, but that is the way of all friends, no matter their species. I've seen many surprising friendships during my life. A pony and a toad, a red-tailed hawk and a white-footed mouse, a lilac bush and a monarch butterfly. All of them had disagreements from time to time. I think Bongo is too pessimistic for such a young bird. Bongo thinks I'm too optimistic for such an old tree. It's true. I am an optimist. I prefer to take the long view on life. Old as I am, I've seen both good and bad, but I've seen far more good than bad. So Bongo and I agree to disagree, and that's fine. We're very different, after all. Bongo, for example, thinks the way we trees name ourselves is ridiculous. As was custom with crows, Bongo chose her name after her first flight. It may not be her only name, however. Crows change names on a whim. Bongo's cousin Gizmo has had 17 names. Sometimes crows adopt human names. I've seen more Joe Crows than I've seen Sunny Days. Sometimes they name themselves after things that catch their fancy. Pop Top, Jujubee, Dead Rat. They'll name themselves after aerobatic maneuvers, death spiral or barrel roll, or after colors, aubergine or beetle black. Many crows opt for sounds they're fond of making. Crows are excellent mimics. I've met crows named Wind Chime, 18-wheeler, and Grouchy Cab Driver, not to mention a few others that are not appropriate for polite company. Down the street lives an aspiring rock band composed of 4 middle schoolers. They practice in a garage. Their instruments include an accordion, a bass guitar, a tuba, and bongo drums. The band has yet to perform outside of the garage, but Bongo loves to sit on the roof and sway to their music. Chapter 5. Names aren't the only way we differ from crows. Some trees are male, some trees are female, and some, like me, are both. It's confusing, as is so often the case with nature. Call me she, call me he, anything will work. Over the years, I've learned that botanists, those lucky souls who study the lives of plants all day, call some trees, such as hollies and willows, dioecious, which means they have separate male and female trees. Lots of other trees, like me, are called monoecious. That's a fancy way of saying that on the same plant, you'll find separate male and female flowers. It is also evidence that trees have far more interesting lives than you sometimes give us credit for. Chapter 6. The only thing trees and crows have in common, in fact, the only thing all the natural world has in common, is the rule that we're not supposed to talk to people. It's for our own protection. At least, that's the theory. I've often wondered if the endless silence is a good idea. There have been so many times I've wanted to speak up, to intervene, to help people. I've never said a word, though. That's just the way the world has always worked. Have there been slip-ups? Sure, mistakes have been made. Last year I heard about a frog named Fly who had been napping in a mailbox. All frogs are named after bugs they enjoy eating. When the mailman opened the box, Fly leapt out with a frantic croak. The mailman fainted. He woke up to Fly, who was apologizing profusely, squatting on his forehead. Clearly a breach of the don't talk to people rule. But as always seems to happen, the incident was soon forgotten. After all, the mailman was absolutely certain that frogs can't talk. Just hearing things, he no doubt told himself. Interestingly enough, he retired not long after the frog incident. In any case, when you consider the number of trees and frogs and otters and wrens and dragonflies and armadillos and everybody else in the natural world, you'd think people would have caught on to our little secret by now. What can I say? Nature is tricky, and people are, well, sorry, but most of you aren't that observant. Perhaps you're wondering, if you're a curious, doubting sort, just exactly how trees communicate. You may find yourself inspecting a nearby ponderosa pine, perhaps, or an aspen or sweet gum, puzzling out the magic. People speak with the help of lungs, throats, voice boxes, tongues, and lips, thanks to an intricate symphony of sound and breath and movement. But there are plenty of other ways to convey information. An eyebrow cocked, a giggle stifled, a tear brushed aside. These too are ways you express yourselves. For a tree, communication is just as complicated and miraculous as it is for humans. In a mysterious dance of sunlight and sugar, water and wind and soil, we build invisible bridges to connect with the world. Frogs have their own way of connecting. Same for dogs, same for newts and spiders, elephants and eagles. How exactly do we do it? That's for us to know and you to figure out. Nature also adores a good secret. Chapter 7. I'm not just a tree, by the way. I'm a home, a community. Folks nest on my branches, burrow between my roots, lay eggs on my leaves. And then there are my hollows, tree hollows, holes in a trunk or branch. Are not uncommon, especially in trees like me, who've been around a while. Hollows can be small enough for tiny salt and pepper chickadees or a family of deer mice, or they can be quite large, big enough for an open-minded bear. Of course, I'm a city tree. We don't get a lot of bears around here, unless they're of the teddy variety. But I've hosted more than my share of raccoons, foxes, skunks, possums, and mice. One year I was home to a lovely and exceedingly polite porcupine family. I've even sheltered a person. Long story. I have lots of those, stored up the way a squirrel hoards acorns. Hollows happen for many reasons. Woodpeckers, fallen branches, lightning, disease, burrowing insects. In my case, I have three hollows. Two medium-sized ones were made by woodpeckers. The largest one happened when I was quite young. I lost a large branch that was weakened by wet snow during a nor'easter. It was a big wound, slow to heal, and my spring leafing that year was paltry, my fall color pale, and frankly, embarrassing. But eventually the hole healed, widened with the help of insects, and now about 4 feet off the ground, I have a deep oval hollow. Hollows offer protection from the elements, a secure spot to sleep and to stash your belongings. They're a safe place. Hollows are proof that something bad can become something good with enough time and care and hope. Being a home to others isn't always easy. Sometimes I feel like an apartment complex with too many residents who don't always get along. Still, we make it work. There's a lot of give and take in nature. Woodpeckers hammer at my trunk, but they also eat annoying pests. Grass cools the earth, but it also bickers with me over water. Every spring, new residents, old friends, and more chances for compromise. This spring, in particular, has seen quite a baby boom. Currently, I am home to owl nestlings, baby possums, and tiny raccoons. I am also visited regularly by the skunk kits who live underneath the front porch of a nearby house. This is unprecedented. Never have I sheltered so many babies. It just doesn't happen. Animals like space. They like their own territory. Normally, there would be arguing, perhaps even a stolen nest or a midnight battle. And certainly, there have been some disagreements. But I've made it clear that eating your neighbors will not be allowed while I'm in charge. Me, I don't feel crowded at all, having so much company. Making others feel safe is a fine way to spend your days.